Urban renewal is a fancy term for spiffing up the joint. In our two Kansas cities, efforts to combat blight and renew our urban centers took off after the end of World War II, but with mixed results. There were lots of visionary ideas, but they often came at the expense of established neighborhoods, architectural landmarks, and even sometimes a sense of community. Joining us today to talk about how successful these major initiatives were in our two cities is Marie-Elise LaRue, is an architect who teaches at the University of Kansas School of Architecture, Design, and Planning, where she is especially interested in the politics of the built environment. Marie-Elise joins us this morning from the studios of Kansas City Public Radio in Lawrence. And good morning. So nice to have you.
Hello. Good morning, Steve. Nice to be here.
How did I do on your name?
You did great, except we're not in Kansas City. We're in Lawrence here.
You're in Lawrence. Yeah, that's right. That's right. Well, that's I wish you'd been
KPR.
Here.
KPR.
Yes. Well, this big push, you know, for urban renewal started after World War II. What triggered all this? What got this thing going?
Actually, it was probably the legacy of the progressive era that had got a little bit sidetracked between the Depression and World War II. When there had been stalling up a lot of housing, and in the Kansas City area in particular, there'd been a lot of in-migration of people to work in the war industries. Mm-hmm. And there was a concern that after the war was out, they started planning for this in 1942. And by 1944 and 45, they knew that they were also going to be in-migration of the returning veterans. So there was this clash, and they were expecting both a decline in employment and an increase in need for housing and employment. And so they had this plan from the 40s to redevelop areas that they considered blighted or undeveloped. Housing was in very poor shape in a lot of places, and especially housing was the intent of the original redevelopment plan.
Was all this coming out of the Roosevelt administration? Was that the genesis here?
Actually, probably started even the first Roosevelt administration during the 1908.
Oh, Teddy Roosevelt. Going back that far, right?
Well, that's when the progressive movement started with this idea of improving housing. Because, mm-hmm. you know, these areas that were considered slums, that kind of language came out of that era. And they wanted to... bring electricity and plumbing, indoor plumbing, and reduce the overcrowding. There was super mm-hmm. overcrowding, and there was a lot of disease and lack of health. And of course, they didn't want the unrest of the socialist system to take hold in the United States. And so they realized that they needed to improve the conditions for the working class, and that was basically the motivation for improving.
So there was this big push then in the 40s, sort of coming at the end of World War II and then moving forward. How successful, in your estimation, were the two Kansas cities at handling urban renewal? I mean, to what extent did urban renewal make our cities better places to live and work?
I think they did a lot of good things. One of the biggest pushes, especially on the Missouri side, was they wanted to improve the transportation sector in the city. There were a lot of at-grade railroad crossings that were dangerous, and also the flooding had damaged a lot of the routes that go between Kansas City, Kansas, and Kansas City, Missouri. And so some of the first projects that were done were trafficways and viaducts to reconnect those at different levels, the Sixth Street Viaduct, for instance. But one of the problems that they created was when they went from just these simple in-city streets to the highway system, which also emerged at about the same time, they ran the highways basically through the lowest cost areas or mm-hmm. the areas that were underutilized. And that had the most negative impact on poorer residential areas, the ethnic areas, the racially segregated areas of the city. And this happened across the United States, not just in Kansas. So we're still sort of reaping some, the benefits that were done of, it's so easy now to go from one place to another. But at the same time, it on the ground, it actually destroyed a lot of the central business areas for residential. So that it created these zoned areas now that are purely either commercial or residential, And, you know, the suburbs emerged from that with the sprawl. And those places just aren't as interesting to live in as we're recognizing as this younger generation are reclaiming the center cities. But there's, you know, the housing tends to be pretty expensive there now. And so,
Well, it's interesting to me that in your point here is that urban renewal didn't always change things for the better. And you just mentioned our interstate highways and the way they cut through our town as an example. Mm-hmm. You know, even today, and I'm sure you're aware, there's talk about finding ways to sort of put a some sort of bridge or top over the interstate highway downtown as a way to keep the downtown cohesive and bring it together. You know, what was the downside of urban renewal when it came to breaking up neighborhoods and the like?
Well, what a lot of what it did is it tore down infrastructure that was that might have been renovatable, you know, repairable. And what that does is it creates a monotony in the suburbs as well as in the downtown area, where all those old buildings, like one of the first projects Kansas City, Missouri did was to redo Main Street, sort of that down the around 7th, 6th, 7th, and 8th Street area to 10th. And they put a parking garage in, and the parking garage is still there at 7th.
Sure, I know where it is,
Yeah, and they widened the street, and they tore down, there had been quite a bit of housing along in the central business area, but they actually business leaders and decided that they didn't really want to replace the housing there for so to have, you know, low income people living in an affordable housing. They wanted to preserve the uses for more lucrative involvements. Mm-hmm. So even though the government set up this idea of facilitating local involvement in the development of their cities, because before that there wasn't really much that cities could do to beyond, you know, individual parcels of land. Mm. And in the 1937 Housing Act, the government established a system of loan and grants and aids to local communities. But then, and then they, by 1944, they pressured, the 41. In 1941 Housing Act, they encouraged states to enact enabling legislation where they gave the power of like eminent domain and appropriation and funding from the federal government to do this. And they at that time they were talking about slums and blight, and it was really focused on housing. Mm-hmm. And over time, by the 50s, you know, it went from individual parcels of land to neighborhoods to entire cities were defined as blighted. Mm-hmm. And this allowed basically it was giving public land, private land, to private developers for other purposes. And that's where the eminent domain has started to run into trouble after the Connecticut Kelso versus New London decision. And Missouri has actually amended their eminent domain laws to give more control over the owner can potentially be the developer of the property rather than them taking it from one owner and giving it to another.
You know, are there any
first dibs?
Are there any other changes that urban renewal brought to our two Kansas cities that you wonder whether they were the right decisions or not? Were there mistakes made that, you know, if it was the way it was back in the day, the cities might be better off?
I mean, the highways was probably the most negative thing, and also destroying the infrastructure, the fabric of these neighborhoods. When you look at, I mean, they took 130 historic buildings down in order to put the 6th Street traffic way in.
Wow!
When you look at old pictures of Kansas City, sure, some of the they did a 15-year. Review of the process in the brochure, and they had these pictures of what was there before and what's there now, and east of downtown had been largely housing, and it was all demolished, and they intended to create this sort of civic center there that it was only partially built, you know, where the Elis Davis Park is.
Oh, sure. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And that was an AIA, the American Institute of Architects, the local architecture group had made these proposals, and which were, you know, very much incorporating modernist principles. And the thing is, this sorting out of the downtown, taking away separating the uses, taking away the mass transit. You know, there was an incredible trolley system in Kansas City that actually linked, you know, Lawrence all the way to Independence, and all that was taken out. And
Well, wish we had that today? Wouldn't that change things dramatically?
Yeah, and I lived in Canadian cities for a long time in Montreal, and that city, the highways didn't go through the main part of the city. And there was when I was there in the 70s, I was living in basically the student ghetto, it was called, the slum area. But there were all these little old houses, but it was affordable and it was walkable to the city. And over time, these things have been renovated, and that Montreal's a wonderful city to live in. And Vancouver waited so long to put they wanted to put highways in, but they were so much disagreement on exactly how to do it that they finally realized in the United States how many cities had destroyed their downtowns with the highways that they decided not to do it.
Marie-Elise LaRue will be presenting A Tale of Two Cities, Urban Renewal Claims and Realities in Kansas City. That's the title of the program at the Kansas City, Missouri Central Library at 14 West 10th Street, 2 o'clock Sunday afternoon. More information about that event, kclibrary.org. If you want to join our conversation with about urban renewal and how it changed our two towns, 816-235-2888 is our phone number, or you can tweet us at KCUR up to date. So who drove the train here, in a sense, Marie-Elise? Did the cities get to decide what they wanted to do, or did the federal government come in and say, this is what's going to happen here?
Oh, no, it was the cities themselves that decided. The federal involvement was up until the 70s, when the block grants were in, that they actually funded affordable housing and renovation. So there was this pool of money available from the federal government to do this. Kansas City participated in the Model Cities program, for instance, in the 60s, and they brought a lot of, I think the Attic School project was built before that, but the Minor, a lot of these projects on the east side and actually along the west, above West Bottoms, in the, Quality Hill and on the west side area were redeveloped during that time. So, over time there were a lot of boosters who really cared about Kansas City's development from the, turn of the century, last century, the 19th century. Mm-hmm. And they created this wonderful boulevard system that still exists.
Yes.
So they did some, and they paid for all of that. You know, that wasn't ever funded through the government. In fact, J.C. Nichols and his developments were all private funding. They didn't get TIFs on it. Mm-hmm. Probably starting with the Crown Center development, which was built in the 60s by the Hall family, the Hall Center, it was called Billboard Hill. It was very run down, and Mr. Hall was very concerned about his city. Very much loved Kansas City, and so he proposed this development, and it was built as a sort of a inward-looking place, so that it really destroyed the street life in the city, but it gave a place where people felt safe. You know, it was a very controlled environment. They could control who lives in there. And this idea of this privatization of public space is one of the legacies of sort of architectural ideas from the 60s, also separating traffic so that way the pedestrian traffic would be separated from the vehicular traffic in all kinds of different ways. So, but we know better now. We've learned that does not create these lively cities that we all want to live in these days. And so, I think that the city putting in the trolley line along Main Street, unfortunately it's just a Union Station to the riverfront, that's a start. But what they really need to do is jump over the train lines that are at the riverfront to connect Kansas City to the river. And also, this idea of capping over the highways is something that, under Mayor Byrne, a few years ago, she not exactly sponsored, but encouraged the School of Architecture to do proposals of how this capping would work, what kind of, and as our cars are becoming more energy efficient, moving more electric cars, moving to self-driving cars. We don't need these highways. You know, I'm a little bit dismayed as I see a new swing over at, you know, South Kansas City going on 435. It's like, you know, I mean, you know, and they're all designed so that cars can move at 60 miles an hour and not slow down, you know, going through that. And those kind of the Department of Transportation, I think, has done a lot of things. You know, they don't really ask local people how they want to do it.
Yeah.
And, you know, in Lawrence, we fought for, I don't know, way before my time here, at least 20 years, this extension of Route 10, you know,
right,
through the wetlands. And now that's being constructed. And who knows what that's going to do to
Let me go to some phone calls here. Let's go to Al from Kansas City, Missouri. Al, we're talking about urban renewal in our two cities. Good morning.
Hi, guys. Great topic. Yeah, urban renewal. Well, when you renew something, you also need life support systems. You need shops. You need small merchants, small businesses. And I'm wondering what kind of opportunities are built into these models that are cost effective for people to set up small businesses. Downtown Kansas City just has some fun things, but it doesn't have a lot of services for the residents. I live downtown now.
That's interesting.
And I'm originally from a neighborhood, you know, from New York, where their neighborhoods are very important. So what kind of opportunities are there, you know, that you know of?
What about encouraging small businesses, mom and pop operations downtown in the midst of all this, Maria Lise?
The Crossroads is a really great place, a great model for that, because one of the things with the problem with urban renewal, it's sort of like cataclysmic money. A lot of money was put into one area to do like a monolithic kind of project, whereas in the Crossroads, over since the late 80s through the 90s, it's been individual artists who move in there, who bought buildings, who renovated them, who, you know, put galleries in them, and really, you know, created this wonderful place that not got so expensive actually for the artists, and it needed you know, support. And you know, like Constantino's is probably the only grocery store right downtown areas, and there's a lot of empty lots too in the downtown.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the hopes with this trolley line is that it will densify development along that corridor, and, you know, unfortunately probably make the lots more valuable, and so in the sense make it more expensive. But one of my students right now is working on a project on empty lots along 39th Street, this idea of installing like modular buildings for exactly for that, for these kind of like startup retail things people could test out.
Right.
You know, like do like business incubators. And there's a lot of actually empty lots in the River Market area still that could benefit from having, you know, these inexpensive modular commercial things that are attractively designed. You know, just because it's inexpensive doesn't mean it can't be, you know, look good.
Yeah.
And make them available, you know, in the city. You know, I mean, I know Mayor James wants to improve the development on East of Troost,
mm-hmm.
which definitely suffered a lot from urban renewal, and you know, basically that whole neighborhood was wiped out except for a few blocks.
I was going to say, how effectively are the two cities handling blight today? What's your sense?
Well, they're one of the biggest problems, both in Kansas City, Kansas, and Kansas City, Missouri, is this idea of empty lots and dilapidated, unoccupied housing. And those things really hurt the neighborhood. You know, there are a lot of closed schools down that I know BNIM architect one time said it was it takes the air out of the neighborhood when that happens. You know,
mm-hmm.
You know, when you close down the school, that means kids aren't walking around there. It's a boarded up building. It's, you know, it's expensive to renovate. And so they just did that at the Bancroft School area. And then Make It Right project that was built there, housing. And so they're hoping that with these catalysts there, these small-scale catalysts, that will improve the rest of the street.
Mm-hmm.
And it's difficult because these neighborhoods, especially like East of Truth, they've been so unfunded for so long. You know, they finally right. getting where the city's spending some money on improving the sidewalks, you know, and demolishing dangerous buildings. But it might be better to reuse these buildings, you know, and
well, let me just point out that Maria Lise LaRue presents A Tale of Two Cities, Urban Renewal Claims and Realities in Kansas City. That'll happen at the Kansas City, Missouri Library, the Central Branch at 14 West 10th Street, downtown, 2 o'clock Sunday afternoon. Maria Lise, you did great. Thanks so much for taking some time.
Thank you very much for inviting me.
It was great to have you.